We will hear argument next in number 221896, In Re Institut Pasteur. Mr. Arrigo, is that?
Arrigo.
Arrigo, thank you.
May it please the Court. Unexpected results are an integral part of the obviousness determination. Thus, as set forth in Graham v. Deere, unexpected results must be considered to determine whether Institut Pasteur's claim method is obvious.
In the context of looking at unexpected results, don't you have to look at the closest prior art and compare the claimed invention to the closest prior art?
Yes, I think you certainly do need to compare it to the closest prior art. And the closest prior art in this particular case is methods of use with morphine.
Why morphine?
Because morphine was, I think if you look at the declaration that we submitted in this application.
But why is that the closest prior art? Why isn't like the PCT from which the patent that's being the comparison patent is drives its priority a 102B reference for the claims here?
Because the claims here are method claims. And if you look at the prior art, the method claims in the prior art never performed the method that we are claiming.
But they did have the same, it wasn't morphine, right? It was the
The same compound that we're talking about.
It's the exact same compound. So why do I have to look at morphine instead of the exact same compound if the closest prior art is the exact same compound?
Because it's not the closest prior art to the claimed invention. The claimed invention is a method. And if we take a look and compare the two applications are both from Institut Pasteur, and that's, we have a double patenting issue here. The first application discovered opiorphine, and that it had pain, that you could treat pain with it, generally. Now, that's fine, and treating pain is a good thing, but morphine was available. The problem with treating pain, and I think that's actually well laid out in the declaration, if you look at in the prior art, one of the big issues with treating pain is pharmacodependence and tolerance. If you treat a patient with morphine, they get addicted to it. You need to use more of it. They have this tolerance and this pharmacodependence. It's difficult to get them off of morphine. So what we're looking for is a substitute for morphine. If you look at the earlier application, it says you can treat pain. It seems to go through some of the same receptors as morphine. So the expectation in the art was that it would be like morphine, that you'd have these problems with pharmacodependence and tolerance. That was the expectation in the art. So if you think about the method of treating a person for 7 days with a certain amount of it, over those 7 days, the expectation, again, this is supported in the declaration, was that that person would develop pharmacodependence and tolerance.
Yeah, this case is an obviousness type double patenting case, right?
That's
correct. You agree, though, that the reference, the PCT reference that I was referring to before, that's actually 102B prior art in this case, right?
Could it be used as a 102? It was not used as a 102.
It's not, but it could be, right?
I don't see any reason why it couldn't have been used as a 102.
Okay.
No, it's actually brought up in the record many times that we said this is not a 102. This is not a 103 rejection. I don't think that it changes the analysis at all, because again, you have to look at unexpected results.
I don't know if it makes a difference, but I'm just thinking about it in terms of again this closest prior art argument that you're making about how, because the claims, I guess, that are being compared to the claims at issue in this case weren't a method, but it seems that there is some reference to method in the prior art reference, so that might be the closest prior art.
But if you look at what's in the prior art and is actually done in the prior art, it's treatment one time. There is no, it's a genus in the prior art. Treat pain. We're talking about a very specific species in our claim that has specific duration, that has specific amounts being delivered to a person per day.
I think I'm a little confused. Maybe you can help me out.
Yes.
I thought you started off by saying, for purposes of unexpected results, you compare to the results of morphine. Now I think I hear you saying the comparison is between the application claims here that are at issue and the 871 claim, which is not about morphine, it's about opiorphine.
In terms of the claims themselves?
A method, right. So for unexpected results, what's the comparison?
Well, the comparison has to be to the closest prior art. If we look at the prior art never used morphine.
I'm sorry, is the closest prior art the 871 claim?
To figure that out, what do we compare it to? If we say that this patent is the closest prior art, it was never used in terms of the amount.
I just want to be clear.
Yes.
This patent, you mean the 871?
Yes.
Okay.
If we talk about that prior patent, it was never used over a period of time. Pharmacodependence and tolerance, which are recited in the claim, are not in the prior art. There was never any treatment over time in the prior art. All there is in the prior art is a broad claim that says treat. And if you look at the examples in the prior patent, what you find is that all they did was they used this opiorphine one time with a mouse and saw that it reduced pain. They didn't do any of the studies that they did in the later application, which is the one that we have on appeal here.
Do you have the appendix with you, by any chance?
I do on my computer.
On page 448, I'm looking at the Rouget declaration.
Yes.
It seems to be that it's important to be able to establish that these unexpected results were not known in 2008. That's correct. Data point, right?
Yes, I believe that's the filing date.
It was not known in 2008, okay. So if you look at Appendix 85, there is here a declaration that opiorphine was known to have these unexpected results in 2007. You look at 85, page 37 of the PCP.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It says that Rougeot disclosed to the public in 2007 that these unexpected results can be expected in 2007.
Which page?
Page 85 of the appendix.
85 of the appendix, mm-hmm. Okay.
Says in 2007, and then it's referring to the formalin test. And if you look at the 871 patent in column 32, you see the formalin test was in 2003. So I was just wondering when these unexpected results were discovered.
The unexpected results are all in the application.
I understand you see what I'm talking about. I'm just a simple-minded person. I see that your case turns on being able to have these unexpected results not known in 2008, and you just agreed that yes, it is necessarily so. And yet in the same appendix you give me, it says we knew about this in 2007.
I think we need to look at what the filing dates are specifically of the patent.
You see what I'm talking about?
And the application.
And then what's the reference to the formalin test on page 85, JA 85?
The formalin test. I'm not sure what the formalin test was specifically.
And then you go to page J614, which is the 871 patent, and it describes, Rougeot was describing the results of the roll-on test in 2003, which is 5 years before 2008.
Well, there were tests with the mouse version of the opiorphine and the human version, which there may be some distinction in terms of which test you're talking about.
Well, don't you think it's important for us to be able to figure out when these unexpected results were discovered?
Well, I think that if you look at the declaration, it is saying...
The appendix page 614, which is column 32 of the 871, seems to be specifically discovering, talking about a formalin test with rats.
Rats.
Right. I'm not sure that the formalin test really has anything to do with the pharmacodependence and the tolerance.
Well, that's...
I don't know either. But
specifically?
Right, but that comes back to appendix 85, which is in your application, which Judge Clevenger was talking about, that says this result is referred to three analytical models, including the formalin test. Opiorphine is capable of inducing the maximum analgesic effect.
Right, that's a test for pain.
Induced by in these results without inducing any of the major adverse effects of morphine, namely anti-peristaltic effect, the pharmacodependence effect, and the tolerance effect, with a cite to 2007.
Right, and I think that that's this application.
Proceedings of the Fourth International Peptide Symposium, I assume that was published in Australia.
I have those proceedings.
It would have been helpful, I'm going to add, if you had the paper versions, we'd be losing many fewer seconds.
Yes.
I just was concerned because it looked to me like there was a disconnect between page 85 of the record and page 448 of the record.
I don't think there is. I think that
I know, but facially there is, because 485 says we discovered these unexpected results 2007.
Yes, and I think that's part of this application, that those were incorporated into this application when it was filed, as opposed to being in the earlier application. I think it's after the filing date of the patent itself. So those results are not in the patent. So I don't think there's any inconsistency. I'd have to run through and look at all of the data, and that would certainly take some time to do. But I think that we have unexpected results.
You're into your rebuttal time now.
I'd like to save that.
Okay.
For rebuttal. Thanks.
Ms. Capra.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Board correctly determined that Representative Claim 35 is unpatentable for obviousness type double patenting over the claims of the 871 patent. I would like to turn you to APPX 530, where the examiner discussed the unexpected results at issue here. The examiner explained that these so-called undisputed facts that the appellant pointed to only demonstrates the beneficial effects of opiorphine as compared to morphine. And perhaps maybe that was unexpected, but appellant failed to demonstrate that these benefits are unexpected as compared to the closest prior art, which, as your honors have recognized, are the claims of the 871 patent, which also do recite treating pain with opiorphine. And the board and the examiner found that because the application not only claims but describes dosages that overlap with those of the pending claims, that treating a patient with the same compound for the same pathology would result in the same types of properties of not inducing pharmacodependence and tolerance.
Can I ask you this question? It seems to me there are two different ways of formulating, and I think your brief uses both of the different ways of formulating the comparison. One is to say that what is claimed here, which is a particular negative effect, was true of the prior art too. And the other is to say, well, once you've narrowed the steps taken, there are these slightly additional constraints on the dosage and the length of time and the dailiness, that whatever the effects are of this were also the effects of the previous one. And that second way of saying it doesn't require anybody to have appreciated those facts at the earlier time. How do we think about that?
So both of those are true. And no matter what...
So you're not contending that the board found or the examiner found that it was recognized at the time of the 871 that there would be an absence of pharmacodependence and an absence of tolerance.
We did not contend that, Your Honor. We simply said that because there is no patentable distinction between the claims of the 871 patents and the claims that are pending today, that any resulting pharmacodependence or tolerance in a patient would have been expected from both of those, or would have been the natural result of both of those method claims being practiced.
Suppose it were the case that the narrowing of the class of steps taken, the body-dependent dosage, the dailiness, the extent of time, that the beneficial lack of tolerance, lack of pharmacodependence was an important reason to narrow to those particular set of constraints. Would the analysis be different?
Perhaps if appellant had shown a superior type of property within the patient at a particular dosage for a particular duration, perhaps then there could have been some criticality to that species within the broad genus that they claimed in the prior claims. But here, that simply wasn't shown. The only data that was shown was that in comparison to morphine, which is an entirely different product, that there was some unexpected showing of pharmacodependence.
So the Rougeau, I believe,
okay. But you may have to ask Capella.
Declaration at Appendix 444 says we get these good effects in this particular treatment regimen, but it doesn't say we don't get those good effects in other variations of the treatment regimen that also would fall within the broader genus.
That's correct.
Of 871.
That's correct. And there simply has been no showing of any unexpected results here. And the prior claims are pretty broad, as appellant even concedes in both their opening and reply brief. And those broad claims, they're perhaps this property within the patient may have been exhibited even at different dosages and different ranges. So there simply isn't showing the criticality of the specific claims that are at issue here. And they are, and as the board and examiner found, there is no patentable distinction between these claims. And if there are no further questions, I yield the rest of the time.
Can you address that last point, which I guess certainly has struck me in this case, trying to figure out how one thinks about this inherency question with a previously unknown property, and how that fits with a large body of case law about identifying species within earlier genus claims. Why isn't the government right here about it being critical that there's no criticality as to these particular properties of the particular narrowing of the actual steps of the method?
Well, I think if you look at the case law in Ray Kaplan, I mean, if you start with a very large genus, the species within that genus are not necessarily obvious. You have to get to those species to start with. So that's really the first part of this that I think that the PTO has simply waved their hands and said, well, it encompasses. And encompasses is not the law. Encompasses doesn't give you...
Well, I think the examiner and the board did more than that. It said, when you look at these particular numbers and think about what an average person ways, and that this would actually, even if you were not thinking about these pharmacodependence and tolerance properties, a skilled artisan would readily get to these particular constraints.
And that's where the unexpected results come in. And they have to be considered before reaching the conclusion of obviousness. And that's not what the PTO does. I mean, if you look at what the PTO says, it says that this is just like Baxter, mere recognition of a latent property in an obvious method. So they said it's an obvious method, and then they say, well, take a look at this, it's inherent in the obvious method. Of course it's inherent in the obvious method, our method. Because they've already reached obviousness without looking at unexpected results. You have to look at the unexpected results first to figure out if it's obvious. If you don't, it's always, unexpected results are always going to be inherent, 100% of the time, because you've already reached obviousness before considering. It's part of the obviousness analysis to get there. They have to be considered first. Otherwise, unexpected results would never get you anywhere. Here we have very good unexpected results. They are lining up almost perfectly with our claims in terms of the dosages that we used. And the PTO hasn't challenged any of the unexpected results whatsoever. They've said, in fact, they seem to agree with them. Perhaps they're unexpected with respect to morphine. And our position has always been morphine is the appropriate comparison. Because the prior art is just this giant genus, and no one within that genus ever did anything that would have shown this unexpected result.
But are you suggesting that the unexpected results in this case should be considered and reflected in the prima facie case analysis of 103, but not as secondary considerations because they have been proven to be not improvements over the nearest prior art?
I think it looks
to me like the narrow prior art issue traps your unexpected results as secondary considerations. You wouldn't consider them.
I don't think so. I think expectations come in at both levels, certainly.
I think there's a difference I think your argument is basically that Honeywell suggests that you take a look at the unexpected results as part of the prima facie case.
I think they have to be. You might be able to make a prima facie case, but that's not the end. You have to really get to obviousness. You have to look at everything.
Where are you suggesting that we should appreciate the unexpected results in the 103 analysis in this case as part of the prima facie case or as part of secondary considerations after we have reached a
I think you really, in this particular case, need to look at them at both levels because we're talking about expectations of the skilled artisan.
Right, but if the nearest prior art is the 871 patent, and if it's so that the unexpected results were to be expected, were inherent in the practice of the 871,
well,
that's neutering the effect of the secondary considerations.
I don't think you could say that they are inherent. I mean, if this were a straight anticipation inherency case, why isn't there a 102 rejection?
Right, isn't that what the case is about? I mean,
it's obviousness.
Excuse me.
The case is about obviousness, not about 102. The PTO could not make a 102 rejection, so they're relying on obviousness. Once they do that, they have to take into consideration unexpected results, the expectations of the skilled artisan,
and
even reaching the fifth-year case.
How do you do it once you have decided that these unexpected results were inherent in the practice of the previous patent?
If they were inherent...
That's a finding in this case, correct?
No, it's not. The inherency, if you look at it, it's mere recognition of a latent property. In other words, inherency in an obvious method. So they're reaching obviousness first and then saying that our unexpected results are inherent not in the prior art, but in our method. And that's the wrong application of the law. That can't be done. I mean, I think all of the law that's been cited by either the PTO or by us would go against that result. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks to all of us. Case is submitted.